Hello and welcome to the latest podcast from the Institute of Welsh Affairs. I'm Harry Thompson, the IWA's Economic Policy Lead. We're an independent think tank working to make Wales better with a strong, confident democracy and a successful, clean, green and fair economy. We're a membership organisation with members across the country and far further afield. We're funded by our members, the events we run ourselves and independent trusts and foundations. In an article written for the Welsh Agenda last year, Nisreen Mansour and Joe Allen from Wales TUC note, trade unionism has become something that lots of us are simply not exposed to. Only around 1 in 6 private sector workers in Wales is a member of a trade union. So for many workers, especially those who entered the labour market in recent decades, they simply have no clear idea about why they should be a member of a union. Not much has changed since this article was written last summer, even if it does feel like we're hearing from the trade union movement more than we did a few years ago. In Wales, young workers aren't joining trade unions in sufficient numbers to make up for retiring older workers, the trade union movement is non-existent in many parts of the private sector, and it faces an extremely restrictive regulatory framework that it is not in the gift of the Welsh Government to reform. Workers who would benefit the most from trade unions, such as those working in the gig economy, are also amongst the least likely to be members. Whilst Wales is in a better position than much of the UK, its union membership levels are still some way away from those at the top of the international table. As part of our work towards a fair economy in Wales, we've conducted a short study into the trade union movement in Wales and explored the potential for unions to structurally rebalance Wales' economy more in favour of low and middle earners. We spoke to workers in a variety of sectors, and particularly young workers and workers in more precarious work. Their stories reveal the persistence of exploitative working conditions, low pay and a lack of bargaining power. Our report, Beyond Social Partnership, Devolved Levers to Support Trade Unions in Wales, was launched yesterday, and we're hoping it can contribute to a discussion around what Welsh Government can do to support the union movement. And as to why we think the Welsh Government should do this, we believe that empowered unions have the potential to increase the labour share of national income, and to ensure that the wage share has a flatter distribution across lower, middle and high-level earners. They can also increase the quality of working life for many people at the bottom of the income distribution and contribute towards economic growth by increasing demand. To discuss our findings and the role of the trade union movement, we spoke to Hannah Blythe, MS, Deputy Minister for Social Partnership, and to Nisreen Mansour, a policy officer at Wales TUC. Hannah Blythe, Deputy Minister for Social Partnership, thank you very much for joining us.
No, thank you, and I very much welcome the work that the IWA is doing on this.
Thank you. I thought I'd start off with your personal involvement with the trade union movement. It's been a big few years for you. You were elected to the Senedd for the first time in 2016, and you were appointed as the Deputy Minister for Social Partnership in 2021. But before that, you were involved in the trade union movement yourself. I wondered if you wanted to tell us a bit about that, what you did, and what made you want to get involved with the union movement in the first place.
Yeah, so like many perhaps of my generation, my first contact with the trade union movement was growing up in the industrial heartlands of North East Wales during the 1980s. And I had one tied, or granddad worked at the Paint and Bear Colliery, and granddad that I grew up and was most influenced with worked at Shot and Steelworks, and I remember him being made redundant there. But before that, just talking to me about collectivism and trade unions, and you know, he wasn't an activist by any chance, but he very much recognised the value of trade unions, and I don't think it really registered at the time, but it must have somehow got into my psyche way back then. But it wasn't until I guess I was a little bit older, and I started working in the trade union movement myself, I think for the best part of a decade prior to being elected. I did a range of work, and that included things when I started working in London. So I think, you know, essentially my job during that time was to be the link between the industrial work of the union and the kind of seeking to influence politics and policy as well. Because whilst, you know, the core function of a trade union is to represent workers in a workplace, we often need to change legislation and change policies and enable to best support trade unions to do what they need to do. So I think, you know, to cut a long story short, I think that you know, the things that really sticks out to me is coming back home to Wales to work for Unite in Wales, and the work we did then with the then Assembly around things that I think people might remember, the The then UK government wanted to axe the Agricultural Wages Board for England and Wales, and there was a big campaign there to try and put something in its place here in Wales, and we were successful in that in creating the Agricultural Advisory Panel. And there was a number of different campaigns and policy initiatives I was involved with, which really actually for me brought home the way in working in Wales, that the constructive relationships between the trade unions and the Welsh Labour government and a whole range of politicians, but also how the opportunities there to really not just change legislation but change lives. And I think that's what kind of pushed me to take that step, which I never thought I would growing up, to actually put myself forward for election. But I always say I wouldn't have been able to do it without my background in the trade union movement, because they not only shaped my values in terms of that experience growing up and then the work that I was involved with on a day-to-day basis, but actually literally helped give me my voice, because I never thought I'd be a politician growing up, not least because I was so shy and hated public speaking. And it was thanks to kind of the support of my trade union colleagues and comrades in the movement that actually gave me that support to get that practice and training and to believe more in myself that I was able to do that and then put myself forward for election.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Thank you. And it's really interesting to hear that you were the political link for Unite working on legislation in the Senedd. And now you're almost on the other side of that same coin, the Deputy Minister for Social Partnership in the Welsh Government. I wonder how you bring your experiences in the trade union movement into your day-to-day job as Deputy Minister for Social Partnership. And I wonder if you could tell us a bit more about what social partnership is and what you're trying to do with your role now as Deputy Minister for Social Partnership.
Yeah, I think just on a lighter note, sometimes I have to be quite careful when I say we and our that I am talking about the Welsh government now rather than the trade union movement. But I think it does help to come from that background and to have that experience, because a lot of the work we do in social partnership is it's built on trusted relationships and understanding of one another. And I think having that insight to the perspective of, in particular, our trade union partners and where they'll be coming from in the development of the Social Partnership and Public Procurement Wales Bill, and all the work that sits alongside it on Fair Work and trying to support and empower trade unions, actually having those kind of not just the relationships that have been built up over a number of years, but that understanding of the perspective of your partners as well, and being able to not just take that into consideration when we're having discussions, but also when we're developing the policy, I'm perhaps able to see things from another partner's perspective as well, which I think is always really helpful.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And a huge part of your job so far has been seeing through the passage of the Social Partnership and Public Procurement Bill into the Senedd and developing that and going through a couple of amendments. So what is the Social Partnership and Public Procurement Bill, and why is it so important?
Very good question. I spent a lot of time over the past year or so getting through the Social Partnership and Public Procurement Wales Bill, and I think it's helpful to give a little bit of background to where it came from. So obviously it was a proposal initially in the now First Minister's Leadership Manifesto, but essentially it builds on a way of working that's evolved over the course of devolution. Like you said before, it's something that I was perhaps involved with from a perspective of a different partners and the trade union movement previously. But it was something that we said that was probably initially born out of crisis, the economic crisis, but then really came to the fore during the coronavirus pandemic. And having those established relationships and being able to come together, those conversations are often challenging, but give you a forum to say, actually, we are ultimately trying to achieve the same end. How do we get there? And it gave us an ability to in real and actually real time during the pandemic to look at some of those challenges, particularly in the workplace and protecting people and keeping people safe, and then being able to come back and actually modify perhaps some of the decisions that have been made, because we have people there who are literally on the ground and be able to tell us and reflect on how it's working in practice. But yeah, so the Social Partnership and Public Procurement Bill actually builds on that way of working and actually puts it on a more statutory footing, on a more formal footing. So there's key aspects of the legislation itself. There's the establishment of Social Partnership Council, which brings together equal numbers of representatives from Welsh Government, employee representatives from the public, private and voluntary sector, and worker representatives nominated from the Wales TUC, representing the appropriate sectors from across from of workers appropriate to that in the council. And that council will advise Welsh Government on our social partnership working, all things Fair Work, but they will set their own work program once they're hopefully established, if this legislation successfully passes through the Senedd. It also places a social partnership duty on certain public bodies, so those public bodies covered by the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act, and that duty will be to work with, to seek consensus and compromise with their trade unions or worker representatives where there's no trade unions recognised, when it comes to setting their wellbeing objectives. So ultimately, it's about actually involving the people that provide those services in actually how those services are shaped and the impact that they have, because bringing their experiences and give them a greater say and stake in how that is delivered longer term as well. We also looked at actually how we could strengthen our commitment to fair work. So as part of the legislation, we're amending the Prosperous Wales Goal from decent work to fair work. And what will happen once the legislation hopefully goes through, then that will trigger review of that. So we'll be able to look again, there'll be opportunities to strengthen our commitment to fair work. And then the other big part of the legislation is around legislating for procurement, for socially responsible procurement for the first time. That's actually about actually creating better social value and with the power of the public purse. We spend a significant amount of money on public procurement in Wales every year, and it's ensuring that actually that is done in a socially responsible aware way, which includes things like fair work, which includes the environment, which includes culture and the economy as well. I think that's a very rough canter through the so it's through a very technical piece of legislation.
It is a very complex piece of legislation as well. It's taken a while for me to get to grips with it, so I can only imagine what passing it must be like.
I do joke that I never thought I'd get so excited talking about procurement, but actually there are, given the levers that we have in Wales, procurement and the power of the public purse really offers, major opportunities to drive some of those policy objectives.
And we talked about the complexity of the law and passing it. Obviously, that's going to be taking up a lot of your time. Hopefully, if the law is passed, as it seems it will be, how do you see your own role as Deputy Minister for Social Partnership evolving after the passage of that Act? What is it that the Deputy Minister for Social Partnership does within the Welsh Government?
So obviously, the legislation is a significant part of what I've been focusing on in the past 12 months or so. But actually, it's about kind of our social partnership working right across government. So alongside the legislation, we've been looking at the various structures that are developed over the years and making sure it all fits together and works well. And I think the legislation being passed is probably just the first step really in the journey. It's going to be about the implementation and how it works in practice. So there'll be a huge job of work to do there in terms of working with all social partners to make sure they're fully engaged, know what's expected of them, particularly around things like the social partnership duty, and actually that we all maximise the opportunities it potentially brings. So I think there'll be a huge job of work in terms of actually the operational side of the legislation and making sure it does, legislating is one thing, but kind of changing lives and the country and workplaces for the better is another. And I think there'll be a huge job of work to follow that. But actually, social partnership, the legislation itself is significant, but it goes much further than that, and it cuts across everything we're trying to do now as a government. We know that, we look at work like the health, the social care forum involving trade unions and working with social partnership, trying to support and sustain the social care sector. We've got some looking things in retail as well, where we know there are challenges in recruitment and retention. So I think the legislation is significant, but it's not the only focus of the work in terms of what we're trying to do in social partnership as well.
And I found that really interesting. I know you haven't read the report yet, but when I was researching it, one thing I found really interesting was those fair work forums, because it's something you see a lot in other countries. They have that sectoral collective bargaining. I wondered if you wanted to talk a bit about these fair work forums that have been created and what it is they do and what you're hoping they'll bring to working people in Wales.
Yeah, so the couple that I just focus on is around the retail sector and also social care as well. The social care one, initially, that's where we've worked upon things like the Real Living Wage for social care workers, but also obviously the broader challenges that we know that face the sector in terms of actually, when we talk about fair work, yes, it is about your pay and your terms and conditions, but it's much more than that too. It's your health and well-being in the workplace. It's those opportunities to progress and upskill. So there are levers where we do have those devolved levers in Wales around that to actually make a difference. So I think one of the things we said to do is actually bring in together partners. So the retail sectors, trade unions are involved there. There's a range of different representatives from the retail sector, from employers as well, and to identify what the key challenges are and try and collectively address them. I actually smiled when you started talking about sectoral reforms, and it's something that exists in other countries. Because it took me back to probably about a decade ago now, I think, when I was first doing some work for Uniting Wales, and we were working with our counterparts in Scotland to see what, you know, what sort of policy interventions we could suggest to make a difference, recognizing you know, industrial and employment rights have remained the responsibility of the UK government. And we were actually looking at things like sector forums as part of that on a voluntary basis. And I think this is something perhaps, you know, we're starting to see within Welsh government now and can be built on, because one of the things we did as part of that, I think we called it making devolution work actually. And those sector forums looked at things perhaps where might currently be quite high, traditionally quite a high union density, and others where, you know, was a real challenge and people probably didn't have that representation at work for a myriad of reasons. But the suggestion was always to focus on you know, a good cross-section of sectors, so to speak, from those. I think there's things we can perhaps look to from the past and from elsewhere, but actually put them into the Welsh context and perspective. And I think there is a model that we can build on moving forward.
Yeah, and that's something that's definitely come through in our research, was that when you're looking at sectoral collective bargaining, so you essentially set in a sector terms and conditions and pay from which everyone agrees into. Obviously, a lot of those levers aren't with the Welsh government, but it does feel like some of that best practice is being translated into a devolved context. So it's really nice to see.
Yeah, and I think if you look at, you know, some of the sectors where we know there's specific challenges, where perhaps there were challenges pre-pandemic and they've been exacerbated by it. So I think using things like hospitality as an example, and actually, you know, retention and recruitment is a challenge for the sustainability of the sector from a business perspective, as well as for the people who worked in that tech sector who might, you know, traditionally, and it's not everywhere, there's some really, really good examples within hospitality in terms of, you know, living wage, fair pay, you know, trade union representation. But as a whole, traditionally the sector has faced many, many challenges. And I think some of those challenges are in common between the worker and the employer or the trade union and the business, in terms of actually if you have perhaps standards right across the sector when it comes to paying conditions, then actually, you know, that not only is going to support the worker in, you know, a better kind of better work, but also it helps the business and helps sustain the sector more broadly as well. So I think, you know, I think one of the things we have found by being able to use or perhaps those closer relationships in Wales and that kind of social partnership approach is actually recognizing many of those challenges or the challenges that face are in common, and there are ways that we can collectively try and address them.
Yeah, and on the trade union movement more generally, lots of people have maybe associated who aren't familiar with these things have associated the union movement maybe with miners, but also maybe with sort of shouty old white men on the TV. What do you see as the role for the trade union movement in modern Wales? Is it modernising, and what is its role today?
Yeah, well, you know, there is this, you know, I think it's the stereotypical idea of what a trade union is, and it's probably aligned with the, you know, people's perhaps stereotypical idea of what a politician is. And, you know, I think, you know, if you look perhaps, you know, you look at the leader of the Wales TUC at the moment, you've got Siobhan Attard, and she's, you know, Nisreen's coming to do a podcast with you. So I think the makeup of the trade union movement, particularly in Wales, is changing. And if you think you look in the public sector, there's a lot of women leaders coming forward. Obviously, there's more to be done, but I think there is that challenge of perhaps, you know, of preconceptions of what a trade union does, what a trade union is as well. And, you know, I think we're in perhaps, you know, it's challenging. You know, your report was how union density has decreased over decades. I think trade union membership actually peaked the year I was born in the UK, but I think it was less to do with me, more to do with Margaret Thatcher coming to power. But actually, last year we did see union membership in Wales increase. So I think we've got a better starting point perhaps than elsewhere in the UK. And I think we can put that down to actually the way we've been able to work together in partnership. And I think the challenge now is to actually perhaps, you know, for us as a government which supports and promotes trade unions, but for the trade union movement more broadly, how it reaches out into those perhaps more non-traditional sectors and spaces. And we've done a bit of work as a government around in the past couple of years around a campaign around knowing your rights and responsibilities at work. So, you know, your rights as a worker and also your responsibilities as an employer and as a worker as well. And we're seeking to build on that with a pilot project which we've recently launched, which is Unions in the World of Work. So that's signing up 35 schools, secondary schools across Wales, and actually aligning with the new curriculum. and actually working alongside the Wales TUC to work with young people about what trade unions do, whether that's representation in the workplace or more broadly around the collectivism and campaigning. So I think there's work that we can do as a government, but there's a work that I think the trade union movement needs to lead as well.
Yeah, and just in terms of those benefits, there might be people who are listening who are a bit nervous about the trade union movement and to maybe associate it with industrial action or disruption. What would you say to those people? What benefits can the trade union movement bring to the Welsh economy and to people in general?
So one thing I say as an individual, unless you're a multi-millionaire or you win the lottery, you're going to spend a significant proportion of your life in work. And actually, trade unions are the best way to give you that support and security and hopefully a collective voice within the workplace as well. I think the challenges and it's in the news, but it's very topical at the moment, that perhaps some people haven't been in a work environment where or have a family member who's been a trade union member or involved with the trade union movement. Their kind of first point of contact with trade unions is what they see in the news through, like you say, industrial action. But industrial action is always, strike action in particular is always a last resort. And there's many other, and trade unions, like I said before, it's their core role is to support people in the workplace to improve their pay, their terms and conditions, and their well-being at work. But actually, the trade unions offer so many other opportunities. In Wales, we still fund the Wales Union Learning Fund. There's opportunities for training and progression. I think, from my own perspective, saying earlier that actually it's like the trade union movement that I was able to have that support to be able to go on courses, and I've benefited from it myself. There are much more, there are learning opportunities, there are broader benefits, and actually being part of a family too. And we know that as individuals, as together as a collective, we are much, much stronger.
Yeah, thank you. And you mentioned earlier actually the union density rates in Wales are a lot higher than elsewhere in the UK. I thought some of them were pretty staggering actually. I think we've hit about 35 or 36% in Wales, and I think it's about 20% union density in England. And I think I did some quick maths, and I think if last year's stats were replicated in the next 2 years, Wales would actually have union density twice as high as in England. Which is really, really positive. But there are some challenges out there because we kind of see a public sector in Wales that is fairly unionized. You've got over 60% in the public sector unionized and really, really high collective bargaining coverage. The challenge is more in the private sector now. I think we see that about 80% of workers in Wales aren't in the private sector aren't members of unions, and there's very little collective bargaining coverage. I wonder if you have any thoughts about what the Welsh government can do, because Wales seems to be better off in terms of union density and collective bargaining coverage than lots of parts of the UK, but there's still that top of the pack in the Nordic countries and Sweden and Denmark and Iceland that have huge unionisation rates, and big parts of that is because of the low rate in the private sector in Wales. I wonder what the Welsh government can do to encourage private sector workers and private sector employers to encourage trade unions and union membership and recognition.
And I think it in part links back to what I said earlier in terms of raising awareness about the broader benefits of trade unions and being a member of one, and the work that we're doing with younger people as well. But I think in terms of what Welsh Government is doing and can continue to do, as it's looking where we have those leaps and where people work with Careers Wales, Business Wales, the role in the things like existing things like the economic contracts as part of that promotes fair work and access to trade unions, but actually how in the future potentially we can build on use those levers that we have, because I think, like you said, once the Social Partnership and Public Procurement Wales Bill hopefully continues its successfully continues its passage through the Senedd, then it's actually what else can we do from a policy perspective that sits around the legislation. So I think, that's actually how we work with employers. We use the networks that we have. We use the Social Partnership Council to actually really drill down and promote those benefits of trade unions. And I think it goes back to actually, it is a big job. And we want to look at actually certain sectors in the first instance that we target, and then are able to analyse and look back actually what's worked and what we can learn from elsewhere. So I think it's actually how we use that various contacts and build on the work we've done in terms of raising awareness and being consistent as a government that we believe that trade unions are not only good for workers, but good for Wales as well.
I look forward to seeing the work that's done in the future. And thank you very much for this chat. It's been really useful. Hannah Blyth, Deputy Minister for Social Partnership. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We're joined now by Nisreen Mansour, Policy Officer for Wales TUC. Nisreen, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Harry.
I thought I'd start off by talking about the image and the role of trade unions. When you talk about trade unions, people might think about the miners' strike or of industrial action in the present day that inconveniences them. It's something that came up in the interviews that we did with young trade union members. They would talk about seeing trade unions on the news, and that always came with a negative connotation. And their decision to join always sort of came from a personal, real life experience that overturned that perception. So what is it that trade unions do in the present day workplace, and what is their relevance to people's lives now?
Oh, trade unions do so much in the workplace. So I think primarily we're about collective action and collective voice. So it's about recognising the power imbalance between an individual worker and their boss compared to a collective of workers and their boss. So using that power, you know, partly it is about the right to withdraw labour. And that's what we're seeing now with the current wave of the strike action, that being the last resort as a way to negotiate better pay, terms and conditions, fairer work outcomes. But unions do a huge amount, from individual representation to health and wellbeing support in the workplace, right down to collective bargaining for better pay, terms and conditions. So it's a very kind of broad set of areas that we cover, but primarily it's about that right to a collective voice and realizing that right. I think often you hear about unions as being talked about as somehow distinct from the workforce, but unions are just a collective of workers.
And there's a lot in the news at the moment, isn't there? Trade unions are definitely one of the big stories in the news. There's lots of industrial action going on. I wonder if you want to talk a bit about what's going on, how it's different to previous industrial action, and what's causing it as well?
Yeah, so there have been long-running rail strikes in the UK. We've got a very positive story to tell about that in Wales, in terms of Transport for Wales have settled with the unions in terms of this year's pay agreement. But I think what you're seeing is in lots of parts of the labour market, just a real kind of growing trend towards not accepting the well below cost of living pay offers that bosses are putting on the table. What we're seeing in the health service at the minute is really interesting. Five unions with a mandate for strike action in Wales, but currently that strike action has been called off by four out of the five unions because actually there are negotiations happening here, unlike across the border in England. Similarly with teachers, you know, NEU with a mandate for strike action, NHAT taking industrial action for the first time. But again, you know, that action has been called off in Wales because of negotiations happening with the Welsh Government. So I think we're seeing definitely a change in attitude, like a growing change in attitude from the workforce in terms of that appetite to take that very last resort thing of strike action. We're seeing unions get more organised, more able to get the vote out for strike action. And we're also seeing that worker power actually pushing Welsh Government to the negotiating table and resulting in better outcomes for workers, which is a really good thing.
So you mentioned there that it sounds like you think the context in Wales is slightly better than it is in England in terms of being able to call off strikes. What is it that's happening in Wales and with devolution and the Welsh Government that is different to what's happening in England? Why is it these strikes have been able to be called off?
So I think the history of unions' relationship with the government in Wales is very strong. There have been elements of social partnership as part of the devolution arrangements for essentially the existence of devolution. That's been both to do with like private sector unions, not so much third sector, but private sector arrangements. So when government's consulting with business organisations, they're also consulting with unions. And also in terms of how our devolved public sector is run, unions have been very much a part of that in Wales. And that commitment to social partnership is very entrenched. So those relationships that exist between trade union officials with Welsh government, with both ministers and officials, are much stronger. And I think that's meant that there is something there to build on. So, obviously unions have done a tremendous job to get these strike mandates. It's very hard to reach the thresholds and overcome all the legal barriers. But rather than that causing a division between government and unions, it's actually kind of forced government to recognise that strength of feeling of the workforce and get around the table. So I think sometimes social partnership is framed in a way that it's about somehow kind of giving over your industrial mandate or relinquishing some power. But actually, I think it's the opposite of that in terms of it makes unions that much stronger because they've got existing relationships to work on and to actually get better outcomes quickly. Because, at the end of the day, we need to kind of be thinking about next year's pay settlements as well and starting those negotiations.
Yeah, and I have to admit that's a prejudice I had towards social partnership when I started writing this report. And then when I started studying other countries where you kind of have best practice examples and looking at some of the Nordic countries and Sweden, they've got really strong social partnership arrangements. But part of that is, and that's part of the reason why they tend to secure better outcomes for workers in some contexts. But part of that's also about the high levels of union density, so that's union membership rates and really widespread collective bargaining coverage that goes into pretty much all areas of the economy too. I think from a UK and a Welsh context, I mean, across the world, the trade union movement has seen some sparks of renewal, but I think it's reasonably fair to say that it's had a long-term decline in the UK and Wales since its peak in the 1970s. I wonder what you think the reasons for that are, and what are the challenges the trade union movement in Wales faces in renewing and attracting lots of members.
I think so. Partly, I think the decline has been a bit of a almost like a kind of tumbleweed type thing, whereby, the reduction in members, the reduction in bargaining power becomes almost something that you can't quite grab hold of, and you lose that density, and therefore you lose that power to get those outcomes, and therefore you kind of make it makes it that much harder to prove the case for unions because you're not getting those gains. I think obviously the legal context, the increasingly restrictive trade union laws, again, make it much harder to, from every step. So from organising workers to taking any form of industrial action to the power you've got to get recognition in a workplace, there are just hurdles everywhere. So that's one aspect of it. And I think there's also something to do with, the changing nature of the labour market and the economy. So the growth in service industries, part of which don't have any history of trade unionism, it's very hard for unions to get a foothold in. To some extent, I think the individualisation of work, the individualisation of things like careers advice, people's experiences in the labour market, people working for smaller businesses where it's, there are no kind of legal rights for recognition for businesses below 20 workers. So I think there are all sorts of conditions like that that have really, really challenged the way in which unions operate. And so I think this revival that we're seeing now is really interesting because it's actually illustrating the value of unions to a whole different group of workers. And I think it's kind of reigniting a sense of like collective purpose in action.
Yeah, and what one of the clear challenges for that renewal and that revival in the trade union movement in Wales is the private sector. It's something you've written about before for our online magazine, and it's something we address in a bit of detail in our report too. I think I'm right in saying we've got trade union membership levels about 60% plus in the public sector, and it's less than 20% in the private sector. You'll send your piece that collective bargaining coverage for big parts of the public sector is pretty good. And obviously, that's because the Welsh government is ultimately responsible for those employers at some level. The private sector seems to be a bigger challenge. The Welsh government isn't the employer there. It doesn't have huge regulatory or legislative powers over a lot of these companies. And headquarters and even managers can often be based outside of Wales. So, what do you think we can do in a devolved sense to encourage private sector membership in Wales or to get some sort of renewal in private and in trade union membership in the private sector in Wales?
I think something we focused a lot on is where Welsh Government has some leverage. So, with a sector like retail, for instance, it's quite mixed in terms of unionisation. So you've got the big supermarkets, almost all of them recognise unions in to some degree, whether that's consultation or going right up to collective bargaining. But then once you go out of those big supermarkets, you're looking at a very different landscape. What we've been doing with the Welsh Government is setting up a Fair Work Forum for retail, integrating the idea of trade unionism in that as part of the mainstream, so as part of the wider financial support they offer to the retail sector, and also thinking about the supply chain, so particularly things like food processing, which again have a mixed record when it comes to unionisation, making sure that both trade unionism and very clear minimum standards around fair work are at least part of the discussion for now. I think the difficulty we've got has been to get Welsh Government to really leverage outcomes from the financial support they give to those sorts of businesses. I think that's really where we need to get to in terms of actual red lines. We've had issues when it comes to anti-union employers in receipt of public funds. And by anti-union, I don't mean just refusing to recognise a union. I mean refusing to allow a union onto their premises, whether that's like their car park even, to speak to workers. And that's essentially a barrier to those workers' basic labour rights, and public money should not be going to them. So red lines like that, red lines which are actually enforced, that's where we need to get to make sure that, essentially public funds aren't going towards labour exploitation and restricting people's rights.
So another challenge we face in Wales in terms of the trade union movement, but also wider afield, is getting young people to be members of trade unions. I did a lot of interviews with young workers in Wales that are trade union members, and a lot of what came across was that they had a negative initial perception or didn't have a perception at all of trade unions. They didn't know what they did. They didn't know what the relevance was. And the idea of paying sort of 10 to £15 a month to be a member of one wasn't very appealing because, in the era of things like Netflix, they couldn't see an immediate tangible benefit from it. But then the personal touch came in. We had one young worker at a big supermarket, and she said that the first aid kits basically weren't being filled up at all. And they had a union rep come in who filled up the first aid kits, which the managers hadn't done, despite the fact they'd asked lots of times for them to be filled. So she realised, oh, trade unions are on my side, and joined. But we found that a lot of young people didn't have much experience at all of trade union membership, what they do, other than what they see in the news. What do you think it is that we can do to get young people joining trade unions? Because one of the big challenges that has been outlined in our report and in other pieces of literature on this is that young people aren't necessarily joining trade unions in big enough numbers to replace older workers that are retiring. So what is it that we can do to appeal to young people to get them to join trade unions?
It's a huge worry, and it's also a case of young people aren't. It's not that young people are not just joining, they're not becoming active trade unionists and therefore not becoming workplace reps. So it's a really kind of scary prospect for the future of our movement, which relies on volunteer activists to make workplaces, whether it's safer, healthier, fairer. I think where we need to get to in Wales, and where we've got a lot of power to do that, is in terms of how we talk about work from the outset. So, it's right in primary education now through the new curriculum. We've got the careers and work-related experience strand, but it doesn't go anywhere near far enough to talk about rights at work, to talk about expectations at work, to talk about what you are owed as an individual worker from your boss. And I think that that's such a missed opportunity still. So I think we just really need to rebalance the way we talk about work. It's not just about what I have got to offer as a worker to the labour market, but about what my, whether it's my basic rights, whether it's my, employment rights through things like statutory minimum wage, all of that should be talked about with just as much importance as what we've got to offer the economy. So I think that's hugely overlooked. And then I think that needs to be far better integrated through things like Careers Wales, through things like the apprenticeship programme. We know across the UK that there is a massive problem with minimum wage underpayment when it comes to apprentices. It's a complex system and it's very poorly enforced. And we need to be thinking not just about why that is the case and how we address that as an issue of, a legal right to a minimum wage, but also what could we do to make sure that workers in that situation are more empowered to tackle exploitation themselves. And that's not through individual recourse, it's through collective action. And so joining a trade union should be considered part of making the labour market far more secure, far safer, far less, with far lower rates of exploitation. And so that's why government policy should push it through every lever it has. And the whole careers employability agenda is an absolute key part of that. But, unions are really not that big a feature of it yet in Wales.
And how do you feel the Welsh government's been doing on this so far? Because we found when we were talking to sort of trade union staff members and trade union leaders that there was a real mixed bag. Some of the public sector unions were really focused on that, who have high membership in their sectors were really focusing on delivering outcomes, and their frustrations were more towards pay deals. But there was an understanding maybe that, the Welsh government was in a difficult position, and they were definitely pleased at least with the engagement they got from the Welsh government in comparison to what they get from Westminster. But one thing the Fair Work Wales report, which was the final report of the Fair Work Commission, recommended was, I think, an explicit statement of support for trade unions, which seems like an interesting place to be 20 years into devolution, that we're focusing on something so basic, which the Welsh government did accept in principle. But then, we looked at the idea of having targets for union density, so union membership levels and collective bargaining, which we don't really have at the moment. Obviously, we have the creation of a new Deputy Minister for Social Partnership, who we've spoken to as part of this podcast. But do you think there's more the Welsh government could be doing in setting targets for union membership and collective bargaining, and just doing more really to drive up trade unionism in Wales? Because it does feel like 20 years into devolution, just having a win as saying we should recognise the benefit of trade unions in Wales is somewhere we maybe should have been in 1999.
Yeah, so I think we've had a number of good statements from Welsh Government expressing their support for trade unionism, and I remember the economy minister writing out to businesses in one of the rounds of the Economic Renewal Fund to say, we expect you to allow trade unions access, but we're not at that point where it's consistent across all aspects of government policy at all, and so we've got a long way to go. I think that in terms of collective bargaining coverage becoming a national indicator, at least that was some progress and moving, dropping the job satisfaction indicator. But obviously the well-being indicators are quite a sort of specific aspect of policy, and I know in your report you've picked up the lack of a national milestone around something like trade union density or collective bargaining, and I think that's a really important recommendation and something that should be adopted by government. And I think there is a slight concern when you think about just trade union membership simply, that you're not necessarily changing the culture of the workplace through that. And I think that that's something that I think the public sector unions perhaps and some of our very high density workplaces have that's distinct from the rest of the Welsh labour market in terms of when you are inducted into the workplace, you're told straight away to meet the union convener, you're told about what the union does in that workplace, who your health and safety rep is. And I think that that's something where government programmes should be looking to drive change as well. So not just asking questions around, do you permit a union to organise, but actually making sure that where we've got apprentices, where we've got people going through other Welsh Government funded projects, that unions are kind of integrated in that throughout, whether it's when someone's joining a workplace, whether it's part of the kind of management worker engagement structure. That should always be a union management structure, for instance, not just a kind of worker committee set up by management. So yeah, there's a huge way to go, and I think things like national milestones, what we measure, is a really, really important part of that.
Yeah, the culture was definitely something that came out of our interviews as well. When we spoke to public sector young union members, I spoke to someone from ambulance teams, for example. They said they joined because When they signed up, it was just seen as part of what you did at the workplace. At first, they didn't really understand the point, but then they had colleagues who explained why they're members of unions. They had a union rep who came and tried to chat to them as well. And the flip side of that, we spoke to a young retail worker in Cardiff who said when she was chatting to a trade union rep, the managers came over and told her to start carry on with work and to not do it, and she was made to feel like she was doing something wrong for talking to a trade union representative, and that she couldn't really get any information out of management, and she had to set up a phone call separately to talk to the trade union representative. So that aspect of a culture of pro trade unionism and a culture of maybe even anti trade unionism is definitely something that came through in our research as well.
Yeah, and I think that's where you get like sustainable membership growth and sustainable union impact. I think often people will talk about something like the individual membership fees that you pay, and I think it's obviously an important argument at the point of like cost of living pressures, and unions do things to address it. But I think even if union membership was much cheaper for people, I don't think it would necessarily drive the sorts of changes that we need to see in terms of collective power and collective action.
And in some of our recommendations in the report, we look at a union renewal fund. It's something that's been done in on a UK level during the New Labour years, and then was scrapped by the incoming coalition government. It's something that's being done in Scotland at the moment, and there are different forms of it in Wales in terms of funding trade unions. We've also got the Wales Union Learning Fund, which is seen as a big success. What do you think of the proposal of a union renewal fund? Is it something the Wales TUC would be interested in looking at? Do you think it's got merits? Well, I'll start that again. Do you want to talk about this? Do you want to talk about a union renewal fund?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm just conscious of the
So,
fact that like Wales TUC don't have like positions on our policy yet. So what do you think?
yeah, but so I think it's a really interesting idea for our general counsel to think about. And I think that the potential for some public funding support, particularly around organising strategies in very low density sectors, similar to what they've done in Scotland, is a very, very exciting opportunity. I think it's necessary because I think that so much of unions' capacity has to go into trying to counter the effects of anti-union law in the UK. And I think that's, it's a very unfair thing because obviously that's workers' membership fees that have to be paid towards that. So I think some public funds towards supporting organising with the expectation that that leads to better employment outcomes for workers in those sectors, because we know that this is the most effective, sustainable way to do that, I think could be really, really exciting. And I think that, the phrases like digital organising are used quite a bit without much experience of what that might look like in different sectors. And also, we have certain communities in Wales that have very large and very large ununionised employers, and the ability to change those communities' futures through unionising their large employers could be huge. So I think that it's a really exciting opportunity for government to work with unions on that. And I think it's part of like a wider tackling poverty agenda. I think there's a slight risk in as much as, the political ties of taking money for organising and what that could mean for the devolved public sector. So we need strict lines as unions to make sure that we're not compromising anything with that. But I think Scotland is a really good example to look at, and I think they've done really, really interesting work with it there. And I'm sure unions here would be really kind of receptive to this recommendation and interested in exploring it further.
So something we look at in our reports is the devolution of employment and industrial relations, particularly looking maybe even more specifically as a first step at trade union regulation and devolution of that. I wonder if the Wales TUC has had a look at this, if it has a position on it yet. I know there's currently a commission on devolution and work that's going on, so you might not want to preempt that too much, but I just wonder if this is something that the Wales TUC is looking at in particular detail.
We don't have a fixed position on this, and there are a lot of assumptions about what our position might be, which is why our Congress last year set up this commission led by Professor Jean Jenkins to explore What sort of devolution settlement could deliver the best outcomes for workers in Wales? It's due to report back in the next couple of months. So I think that should help us formulate a position. I think it will probably inspire quite a lot of debate because I think unions probably have very different views on it to some extent based on where their membership is and what they might be looking to secure from that. But I think what you've put in your report around thinking about the devolution of employment or industrial relations in particular or trade union law is really interesting because I've not heard the debate framed in that way before. And I think it fits very well with the kind of rights-based approach Welsh Government like to take and how our Senedd has sought to formulate policy as well. So I think this will definitely be something that we're looking at as part of the commission, as a union movement. And yeah, I think it's a very exciting area for the future of devolution in Wales.
Yeah, it seemed really interesting to me as we were writing this. I mean, we did have some mixed opinions from trade unions. We spoke to them that there was a broad interest and support I felt from some of the ones we spoke to. There was concerns about how it would be done as well and what the impacts would be. I think one of the justifications I thought for looking at that was the Trade Union Wales Act 2017, where some of the restrictions on trade unions placed by the UK government in their own 2016 Act were removed for public services in Wales. I thought that was a good justification for it because the Welsh government obviously is wanting to act in this area if it can, because it probably has. But what one trade union staff member raised to me the fact that actually it could make well, one concern they had at the recent round of balloting was that it could be you could end up in strike in Wales, where you have a slightly more amiable government to trade unions and not in strike in England, which could give an impression that things are worse in Wales than they are in England, despite the fact it's actually just because the restrictions aren't there in Wales in the same way they are in England. So it's an interesting debate, and yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what the Commission on Devolution Work says.
Yeah, it is an interesting debate, and I think I'd counter that officer's argument by saying an engaged workforce is a good thing overall, and perhaps a product of a government with a healthier attitude to unions. But some of the other challenges are things like, there are a lot of England, Wales, or UK-wide collective agreements, so that there are risks associated with breaking that up. So we need a very clear idea of whatever Wales's future, how we ensure that that results in stronger industrial relations and stronger trade union powers.
So one proposal we look at, it's probably our primary proposal from the report, is a union renewal fund, which is basically a bids-based pot of money that goes towards campaigns or organisers towards what we're calling dark spots in the trade union movement in Wales. So we've got things like the gig economy, where people typically aren't members of trade unions because it's a new industry. It's very atomised, very individualised. And there's not really any history of trade unionism, and probably not very sympathetic employers towards the trade union movement either. And when we've spoken about culture already, obviously there's not a culture of union membership there at all. So one thing we're looking at is the Welsh Government potentially funding campaigns and organisers to get those sorts of people who need trade union representation the most into trade unions. I wonder what your opinion is on that, and if you think I should also say it's partially based on a fund that was existing in the New Labour years at a UK level, and also currently exists, the Fair Work Fund, at a Scottish Government level now. I wonder what your opinion is on a similar one in Wales.
I think it's a really interesting idea, and it's something that I think our general counsel would really like to take a closer look at, because I think it would really illustrate Welsh Government's sort of investment in fair work in a sustainable way. Unions are self-organised, and the idea of growing membership in a completely new sector with no history of trade unionism, no real membership, is hugely challenging. And it's very difficult for unions to use their existing funds from the sectors where they do have members and organise in to take that leap into those new sectors. And so I think it feels like quite a natural product of social partnership that you would see Welsh Government saying, well, actually, we've got huge issues with unfair work in this sector because it is unorganised and needing unions' assistance to organise that. And I think that idea about empowering workers and making sure that they're determining their own definition of fair work within their sectors is that kind of future generations approach to how we make the labour market fairer. I think there are always some risks with taking money from government in any respects. So I think that we would need some red lines. I'm sure government would want, I think this type of model in the devolved public sector wouldn't feel appropriate. But I think, particularly because government doesn't have direct levers over the conditions of employment in the private sector, this is one way of circumventing that in a way that can lead to those tangible better outcomes like higher pay, more secure contracts, the types of things that we really need to address in parts of the labour market.
Nisreen Mansour, Policy Officer for Wales TUC. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. You can find the report and Nisreen's article on our website or in the episode notes shared along with this episode. If you missed our launch event, you'll also be able to catch it on the IWA's YouTube channel. The research that led to this report was supported by a grant from the Friends Provident Charitable Foundation, and we're very grateful for that. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to find out more about the IWA and how to support our work, please visit our website.